Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, yo, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network, hour number 3 of our radio program. Lots going on in the sports world. Fun weekend, not the best weekend, but a fun weekend of college football. Another massive weekend in the NFL. You got the World Series. I'll be going to the big ballpark in the Bronx tonight for a little game 3. So you can follow me on my socials, Twitter and Instagram, at Zach Gelb, Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. And we'll give you a little behind-the-scenes action at the World Series. This is a must-win for the Yankees tonight. And I don't think I'm going out on a limb. They're down 2-0 to the Dodgers. If they're going to win this series, quite frankly, I think the Yankees have to win all 3 in New York. I think they'll take 2 out of 3 in New York, and I will stand by my original prediction of the Dodgers in 6. So that's kind of the lay of the land in the sports world right now. So it is a Monday. I know people are trying to feel positive on a Monday, but we're going to go the opposite way. We just are. And I'm going to ask a simple question. And I really think the answer is between 2 teams. Considering the expectations. So no, the Carolina Panthers being trashed don't apply here. Like the Patriots, I know they won yesterday. But, you know, if you were going to say the Patriots, this doesn't apply because no one thought the Patriots are going to be any good. And I'm talking about teams that people thought could be good this year or had expectations for this year. Who has been the most disappointing team in the NFL? And really, you were going to be in the mix in this one, depending on what the outcome was going to be of that Cowboys 49ers game. And I walk away from that Cowboys 49ers game where the Cowboys are up 10-3, then they allow 24 unanswered. The Niners, I thought, were about to have another gem under Kyle Shanahan where they were going to choke another game away. You know, like an NFC Championship game that they did up against the Rams. You know, the 2 Super Bowls, obviously, that they had with Kyle as the head honcho of the Niners. You know, Kyle Shanahan was also the OC for the Atlanta Falcons. Like, and we saw this year them choke some games away, too. I thought we were on the verge of that. And you know what's so sad, Stu? I'm sitting there, you know, when you get to late into the Sunday night game, after watching all the football in the 1 o'clock window and the 4 o'clock window, sometimes when the Sunday night game's on, it's like, oh, this is football? And it just like all blends together. And you're like still looking at the screen, but you're like, wow, I've looked at the screen for so long. And you really need like a moment to get you invested. Like you need a good game. And the Cowboys gave a little punch out of the gate, but then the Niners looked like they just delivered a knockout punch and that game was over. And then out of nowhere, the Cowboys make this a game. It's a 6-point game. And it makes you like, okay, let me no longer be a couch potato. Let me sit up. Let me get on the edge of the cushion. And let me get really invested. And when Dak Prescott, on the first damn play, threw a ball that should have been intercepted. I don't know how Fred Warner didn't pick it off. I'm like, come on. Why did I think that Dak Prescott was actually going to go do something in this spot? And then we know after that, the Cowboys did absolutely nothing. But that's such, you know what that is? That's the Cowboys against the Ravens. It really is. Where you're getting smacked around by the Ravens. You get yourself back in the game. And you maybe say, okay, maybe the Cowboys could be on the right side of this. And then, and you know what? My picks haven't been bad this year. I think I'm like a game over 500. I'm right at 500. Would you take that? But let me tell you, the last 2 weeks, I need to apologize. I didn't put the Cowboys in my pick'em, you know, for the picks this week against the spread. But I thought the Cowboys were going to beat the Niners. And I never think the Cowboys are going to beat the Niners. And then last week, I thought the Niners were going to beat the Chiefs. Okay? So those last 2 weeks, when I believe that the Niners could beat the Chiefs, shame on me. And when I believe the Cowboys, even with all the 49ers injuries, could beat the 49ers, shame on me. And that's Zach Yelp, who calls them the Drama Dallas Choking Cowboys. And even I thought the Cowboys could win this week. And I said in the offseason the Cowboys were going to miss the playoffs. If they make the playoffs this year, I'll be stunned. And the culture now of the Cowboys is just creating headlines and not actually winning. And not winning when it matters the most. But whoever was going to come out as the loser of that Cowboys 49ers game, they would have been on this poll question. Who has been the most disappointing team in the NFL? Because the Niners would have lost. They would have been, oh, they're sitting there at 3-5. Yikes, what happened? So, here we go. The four choices. Dolphins, Jets, Bengals, and Cowboys. I will go through these answers. It can't be the Dolphins. And I know the Dolphins are going to miss the playoffs. And Miami's sitting there. And even yesterday when they get Tua back and the offense functions again, they don't get the win, they lose to the Cardinals. But the Dolphins are 2-5. And Tua has his limitations. The Dolphins as a team have limitations. I think the Dolphins are kind of, you know, just a team that they make the playoffs, they can make the playoffs, and you expect nothing out of them in the postseason. You know, if they win a playoff game, throw a parade. Because it's like great for the Miami Dolphins. And I had the Dolphins slightly missing the playoffs this year, not because I thought they were some trash football team. It's because of two things. Number one, I thought the AFC was loaded, and there was going to be some teams with 9 or 10 wins that would miss the postseason, and that the Dolphins would be one of them. And number two, it's like last year I said Tua was going to get through the season healthy, and I hate predicting injuries. I do. And it's so tough to do, and you really can't do it. But last year I said when everyone thought Tua wasn't going to get through the season, that's the year that he gets through the season. But then I reiterated this offseason, not predicting that an injury would occur, but just because he got through one season, it doesn't mean the injury concerns just wash away. Like, with one concussion, as we've seen, they could pop right back up. But at 2-5, because of the fact that Tua missed, what, 4 games, it's tough for me to say that the Dolphins are the most disappointing team. That's the key word. Disappointing team in the NFL. So I will cross the Dolphins off this list. And that leaves me with these three teams. Jets, Bengals, Cowboys. So, depending on where you're at with the Cowboys, I think factors into the way that you answer this question. I don't look at the Cowboys as being disappointing this year. I look at the Cowboys as how a football team should look like when you got a lame duck coach. You had a quarterback that all of season long you know was just good, and you made him fight for his contract when you knew you were going to pay him anyway. You had an owner who is clearly way past his prime. He hasn't been to a Super Bowl since 1995 or an NFC Championship game since 1995. And he runs an operation that's about headlines, not wins. He runs an operation where you never expect them to actually win a big game. I'm not talking about yesterday. I'm talking about games in the postseason. So it's like, I look at the Cowboys, there was a lot of drama this offseason. They said they were all in. They weren't great last year. They weren't all in. They didn't get better. The Cowboys regressed this past offseason. So considering the expectation, and my expectation was the Cowboys would miss the playoffs, for them to look like a team that's trending towards missing the playoffs, I'm not going to sit here and say the most disappointing team in the NFL. So this is where the answer gets tricky. Is it the Jets or the Bengals? Because the Bengals are viewed higher than the New York Jets. The Bengals, the last few years, have been the only team, really, that we legitimately have confidence in when you play the Kansas City Chiefs to be the team that prevents the Kansas City Chiefs from winning it all. And Cincinnati's at 3-5. And I think I'm one of the few in the national media who have accurately discussed the Cincinnati Bengals this year. Because it drives me bonkers. As Emmett Smith would say, it makes me hot when he joined us in studio. When people still try to tell you that the Bengals are a Super Bowl contender, can they get to 500 first before we declare that the Bengals are back? And the Bengals, even in their three wins, they come against lousy football teams. So this idea that the Bengals this year are this great football team when they've defeated the Panthers, the Browns, and the Giants, and it wasn't like they had these pretty victories up against either of those teams, it's almost like embarrassing. And you're telling me who the Bengals are based off of who they've been in the past, not who they are this year in the year of 2024. And yesterday, in a game that was a toss-up, in a game that was even, right? Eagles and Bengals going in, a lot of questions about those teams, a lot of teams with talent that aren't meeting where they're supposed to be. For that game at halftime to be tied up at 10 apiece, and then for it to end 37-17, I don't want to hear anyone tell me Cincinnati could do this, Cincinnati could do that, Cincinnati could do this, Cincinnati could do that for this year. Because here's my question. What are you basing it off of? But Zach, they always start off slow. Zach, this is what they do. They're 3-5. This is not starting off the year 0-2 or 1-2 or 1-3. They're 3-5. You are what your record says you are. Now, maybe they could go on a run and make the playoffs, but if you want to say that, what is it based off of? What is it rooted in? It's not rooted in any substance. It's not rooted in anything you could tangibly latch onto other than, oh, well, they did it in the past. And we've seen teams get off the crappy starts and then be standing there in the postseason at the end of the year. But no one has really said this about Cincinnati. Because the thing that we praise them about the most is their week two loss to Kansas City. This defense stinks. The offense, even when they play great, and they didn't play great yesterday, they go score 5 touchdowns against the Ravens, and it's not enough. So stop telling me what the Bengals can do. And how about Cincinnati shows me what they will do moving forward? But even with that being said, I can't say the Bengals are the most disappointing team in the NFL. And here was the difference for me. Because I had a higher expectation for the Bengals than the Jets this year. I thought the Bengals were one of the teams that were on my short list that could win the Super Bowl. The Jets were a Super Bowl contender, but I never viewed them as a team that was going to get to the Super Bowl. I thought of everything, if every little thing, if every T was crossed, if every I was dotted, the best the Jets could do this year was get to an AFC championship game. But here's why I go the Jets are more disappointing than the Bengals. The Jets are just more obnoxious. Like, I know it's not the greatest analysis in the world. The Bengals don't annoy me. The Bengals lose. It's more the discourse around the Bengals from people in the media. It's not the Bengals themselves. Like, sure, Jamar Chase could say a stupid thing here from time to time. But the Jets walk around like they are this great team. The defensive players think they're the early 2000 Ravens, the 85 Bears, the Steel Curtain Steelers, the LOB Seahawks. They think they're a great defense. You just allowed a team that can't block, can't catch, and had a backup quarterback walk right down the field with the game on the line and go get a victory. I'm a Patriot fan saying that. Don't give me this all-time great defense nonsense. This defense is fine. It's good, maybe if you squint really hard. Sauce Gardner overrated. And I hate to say that, but he is. He stunk this year. He has been terrible. You know, the Jets walk around like they are this god football team. When the organization, outside of like 3 or 4 years, has been one of the biggest jokes in NFL history. So the defense is a joke. Offensively, Aaron Rodgers, I'll play you the audio again for the third time in just a second. But how Aaron Rodgers handled that loss yesterday, with an offensive line, I get it, it's not great. You can't get on the same page with Garrett Wilson. Breece Hall's too inconsistent. You trade for Devontae Adams, he gets locked up by Christian Gonzalez. Hey, Sauce Gardner, that is a real great cornerback, Christian Gonzalez. Maybe you should take some notes from the youngster. But Aaron Rodgers yesterday just comes off as a douche. Okay? There's no other way to say it. So he gets Robert Saleh fired. I get it. Robert Saleh deserved to get fired after the Buffalo game. They didn't give him the Buffalo game, but you can't defend the record of Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh shouldn't be this team's coach. But the only reason he was the team's coach because Aaron Rodgers could do whatever he wanted, and Rodgers knew he was a doormat. Then Rodgers finally gets some pushback from Saleh, and Saleh's fired within 2 weeks. So Olberg takes over. There's no emotional uplift after you get a coach fired. Usually that's like a point that galvanizes a locker room, and you at least win one game, right? One game. You may lose all the rest of them, but at least you win one game. And Jeff Olberg says something along the lines of, hey, like, we're really in the darkness now. Everyone's going to be against us. People are going to be crushing us. And it's a pretty innocuous comment. Like, that wasn't Jeff Olberg trying to be witty, trying to be funny, poke fun at the Rodgers situation with the darkness retreat. But this jackass, I'm sorry, he's just a jackass. And Aaron Rodgers gets to the podium. And when you are 2-6, you've lost five in a row. You have the audacity because you're in love with yourself, you're smug, and you never think you know what stinks to poke fun at the darkness comment and tie it to your experience of seeing the darkness on your darkness retreat. Are you effing kidding me? Listen up, here's Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there, make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what the other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams, but if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
He just doesn't care. He doesn't. I'm sorry, folks. He doesn't care. And that's, to me, why the Jets are more disappointing and the most disappointing team in the NFL than the Bengals. It's one thing to have a disappointing season. It's one thing to not meet expectations. But you actually got to appear like you care and you want to turn it around. The Bengals try to turn it around. The Jets, they just try to put lipstick on a pig. Oh, we'll fire the coach. We'll trade for Devontae Adams. But when your quarterback has a loser mentality and he's one of the top 10 greatest quarterbacks of all time, I get it. For all you people that slobber over Rodgers and never criticize him for 1 second, he's a top 10 quarterback of all time. You happy? You know, I just gave you your binky. I put it in the mouth. Now shut up, all right? Enough. You got your little binky. We'll make you some, we'll get you some warm milk, we'll get you some cookies, and we'll pat you on the cabeza. You know, good job, little Johnny, all right? So all you Roger defenders, shut up for a second. But Aaron Rodgers there just does not give a rat's ass. He doesn't give a flying bleep that the Jets are 2-6 and that they're on a 5-game losing streak. So when you don't care when you lose, and at least when you have a little fight when you lose and show like you care, that's the difference maker for me on why the Jets are the most disappointing team in the NFL. So let me give you the results on this poll question, which you can find at Zach Gelb on Twitter, at INF Sportsnet as well. Who has been the most disappointing team in the NFL? 58.6% say the New York Jets. 18.2% say the Bengals. 19.2% say the Cowboys. The Cowboys are actually in second. And then 3.9% say the Miami Dolphins. Stupak Jr., what do you got? Who's the most disappointing team?
So I actually really disagree with those results. I definitely wouldn't put the Dolphins on there just because of the quarterback getting hurt. Like, I think a team like the Jaguars, to me, are more disappointing because people had them in the playoffs and they've just been a train wreck.
So I actually thought about putting the Jaguars on this list. They were the fifth team. I only get four options in the Twitter poll. The reason why I didn't put the Jaguars on is this. I had the view that the Jaguars are going to make the playoffs. I don't know if a lot of people had that view nationally. I think a lot of people, deservedly so now, were critical of Trevor Lawrence and just didn't believe in Doug Peterson. But is the Jaguars your answer?
No, they're not my answer. I just think they should be in the mix.
If you were doing the poll, you would say Dolphins, Tua got hurt, cross them off, put the Jaguars in there. That's fair.
Yeah. So the Cowboys and Jets, I thought both those teams are kind of overrated going into the season. I thought they were like 9-win teams. Maybe the Jets, they'd win 10 and miss the playoffs. Mm-hmm. The Bengals, for me, I thought were the Chiefs' biggest competition. Probably, if it wasn't for the Chiefs, I would have picked them to win the Super Bowl. Gotcha. I thought you know, just had such a good roster, and the fact that they are only a 3-win team, to me, they're the most disappointing. I would say they're number one, followed by the Jets, too.
No, it's definitely fair, and it's hard to argue. You know, it really is. I was splitting hair with the Bengals and the Jets, so I ended up going with the Jets. But no, it's a good response out of Stu going with the Cincinnati Bengals. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come on back. No huddle offense in five.
Touchdowns, sacks, upsets, and last-minute heroics. Another NFL Sunday is in the books, and we've got you covered with the biggest plays and sound bites from another wild week in the National Football League. It's time for No Huddle Offense on the Zach Gelb Show.
We saw the San Francisco 49ers score 21 points in the third quarter. They take care of the 49ers 30 to 24, the 49ers, that is. And in the contest on National Tight Ends Day, Mr. Kittle had 6 catches for 128 yards and a touchdown. Deebo Samuel had 4 for 71 in this game. And Brock Purdy bounced back 260 yards, a passing touchdown, 56 yards, and a rushing touchdown as well. Dak Prescott up and down in this one, 243 passing yards, 2 passing touchdowns, 2 interceptions, should have had 3 towards the end of the game. And CeeDee Lamb did wake up late, 13 catches for 146 yards and 2 touchdowns. Let's listen up, though. Brock Purdy on National Tight Ends Day found his guy, George Kittle, for the 2-yard score to make it 20-10, San Francisco.
Brock looking right, going to throw wide open, George Kittle. A flag is down.
Offensive,
they're
going to
get a pick play on Conley.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
Yeah, he was trying to run around and got pushed into
him.
No foul. Touchdown, George Kittle.
That's great on the San Francisco 49ers radio network. I'm not going to lie. When I saw that, I was like, okay, it's going to get called back. And then I like went to go throw out my trash, which is like right across my apartment, the trash room. So I took the trash bag, I threw it back, and I came back, and I'm like, oh, Kittle scored again? And then I ended up seeing that the play, the flag was actually picked up. It wasn't like Stu, who just turned off the game for Commanders and Bears and missed the Hail Mary. But the 49ers, by the way, Stu, as a team, 36 carries on the ground. No Christian McCaffrey once again. 223 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. And that leads you to our question today.
Yeah, so do you think that the success of so many running backs with the 49ers devalues McCaffrey at all?
So you need a rushing attack in this league. You don't need a bell cow back. McCaffrey does so much more than just running the football. It's also how he catches the ball out of the backfield. He is one of the more lethal non-quarterbacks in this league. So when you ask me, does the success of so many running backs in San Francisco devalue McCaffrey? It does a little bit, but you still need McCaffrey in order to win a Super Bowl. All right, let's head to a dump of a stadium, FedEx Field. I think that's what they still call it, in Landover, Maryland. This place is absolutely a dump, but for years, it's been a dump that nobody would attend. And that's one of the proud fan bases that used to be in the NFL. Now those fans have come on back. Daniel Snyder out, Josh Harris in, and oh yeah, by the way, they got a quarterback in Jaden Daniels. It looked like the Commanders were going to lose this game. It looked like the Commanders were going to pick up their third loss of the season. But then, against all odds, and after avoiding a few tackles, and then you had Stevenson chirping the fans and the Bears, and they realized, oh, here comes a Hail Mary. I got to go make a play. This unbelievable play happened, and actually something rich happened, something great happened in that dump of a stadium in Landover, Maryland. Listen up.
Daniels backing up, now steps up, fires, heads towards the end zone. It is World Series just go, baby!
Kyler!
Awesome.
Walk-off touchdown!
Who is going to be that old curmudgeon broadcaster who's an asshat?
That goes, oh, you barely know what's going on. You know, can you tell the color analyst to shut up for a second?
You know, who's going to be that dope? You know someone will be out there. That's one of the all-time great calls. That is awesome. And it sounds like you're just listening to a bunch of guys that were in a living room just jumping up and down after that crazy play happens. That was great. I saw Linnell Willingham and Toby down in D.C. They do a post-game show on the radio for the team and 106.7 The Fam. So they were watching that game, obviously, and the cameras are rolling. And they, like, the entire time they're like, they're going to do a Hail Mary. Why do they do a Hail Mary? You got to run. You got to do hook and ladder and all that stuff. And then when the ball was caught, Toby's losing his mind. Linnell hits the floor. I don't even know if he stood back up. That clip was rolling for 2 minutes. I never saw him actually get back up. That's how delirious and how crazy he was going. So the stats from this one, Caleb Williams, he had 131 passing yards in the game, 41 rushing yards. At one point, when they were through three quarters, only had 36 passing yards. DeAndre Swift had 129 rushing yards and a touchdown. It was a 56-yard rushing touchdown. Roma Dunze, only three catches, 41 yards. Keenan Allen, 2 for 39. DJ Moore, 2 for 27. And then the Jaden Daniels show continues to roll, 21 to 38 for 326 passing yards and a touchdown. And then also in this one, Jaden Daniels, even though he only had 52 rushing yards in the game, which is a nice performance for Jaden Daniels, we saw the Commanders go 32 carries for 168 rushing yards. Stu, Commanders win 18 to 15. What's the question here?
Yeah, you talked about the Caleb Williams stat line. What have you made of his extreme up and down play so far this season?
I just think it's really a product of a rookie quarterback. Not everyone's going to be C.J. Stroud. Not everyone's going to be Jaden Daniels. I know it doesn't make it look great, but you could see the signs that the guy's going to be a really good quarterback. I think the coaching is bad. Like, you don't need the stats to be awesome. And I know they survived, and right, he showed some toughness late after they just had a boneheaded decision to hand the ball off to an offensive lineman. They end up getting the ball back, and they punch the ball in the end zone with 25 seconds left. It's like, you can't win that game when your quarterback doesn't play his best, and he still puts you in position to go win the game. To me, there's so many more things that I point out to yesterday than Caleb Williams up against a veteran defensive-minded head coach and Dan Quinn not playing great. Like, they should have won the game. You know, period, stop. So there's going to be some good, there's going to be some bad with Caleb Williams, but I'm not freaking out over it with what I've seen so far. All right, here we go, Brownies. Here we go. Let's hear Jameis Winston, 38-yard go-ahead touchdown pass to Cedric Tillman.
Jameis to throw. Jameis is on. Jameis going deep. Has Tillman. End zone. Tillman!
Throw by Jameis Winston, over 300 yards, Tillman, the first 100-yard game of his career.
And how about that performance by Jameis Winston? 334 passing yards, 3 touchdowns, pretty much rest in peace to the career of Deshaun Watson, ever starting again in the NFL. Derrick Henry, 11 carries, 4, 72 yards. He's on pace for 2,010 yards. Lamar Jackson, 289 passing yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, had 46 rushing yards in the game and 19 total touchdowns to 2 interceptions on the season. But the Brownies take care of the Ravens, 29-24. Browns now 2-6, Ravens 5-3. Stu?
So can Jameis Winston, can he still be a full-time starting quarterback in the NFL?
No, I think he's a backup quarterback where if you need him to start after a quarterback gets hurt, he could be competent. He protected the football yesterday, which is a good thing to see. You know, can he go start for a team, I guess, for a year or two? It's possible, but am I going to think that team's going to be any good? That's a different question. But I don't think he's a full-time starting quarterback. All right, let's head to Atlanta up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We knew going into this one a few weeks back, the Falcons already defeated the Bucs. So if the Falcons got another win, that pretty much makes them not only in the driver's seat, but feeling like they're definitely going to win that NFC South. We know the Panthers are no good. We know the Saints are no good. Tampa falls to 4-4. Falcons improved to 5-3. But remember, they now have 2 victories over the Buccaneers. Falcons win 31-26. Kirk Cousins, you like that? You like that? 4 passing touchdowns in the game. Had 276 passing yards in this one. He has 785 yards, 8 touchdowns, and a pick in 2 games versus Tampa Bay this year. Darnell Mooney, 5 for 92. Kyle Pitts, 4 for 91 and 2 touchdowns. And by the way, in this game, I think it was his second touchdown. I thought for sure he fumbled the ball before the ball crossed the plane. But they ended up ruling it and out in further review called it a touchdown. And then Baker Mayfield, with no Mike Evans, no Chris Godwin, he leads the NFL in passing yards and touchdowns in his third in completion percentage. He had 330 passing yards yesterday, three touchdowns and two picks. But Stu, let's hear Kirk Cousins fire off a 30-yard touchdown pass to Darnell Mooney. This made it Falcons 21, Bucks 14.
Tied at 14 with 2:19 to play in the first half. Cousins in the gun. Three to the right, one to the left. Here's Kirk from the pocket. Throws. Mooney caught. Touchdown, Atlanta. Darnell Mooney again. Just continues to terrorize Tampa.
Stu, what do we got cooking here on the question?
Yeah, you talked about Baker Mayfield and what he did without his top two wide receivers. Is he underappreciated, you think, as a quarterback?
Yeah, I do. Baker was run out of Cleveland. Now, I understand why they did it at the time. But once what transpired in Carolina, you thought that was the end of the road for him. He then took Tampa Bay to the playoffs last year and had them win a playoff game in their first year without Tom Brady. And then, this year, you know, they're in the playoff mix, but he's still playing well with Evans and Godwin, right, not being at 100%, and now Godwin out for the year, and Evans going to be out for more than a few weeks. I think Baker is a top 15 quarterback in the league. I think Baker is a good quarterback. I'm not saying he's a top 10 quarterback, but you could do a whole lot worse than Baker Mayfield. And you know what he has? He's guts. He's determination. He is well, and he cares. Like, you know what? I'll say this. I think the Jets would win more games this year with Baker Mayfield as their quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers playing on one leg. He's cooked. Aaron Rodgers, you know, is way past his prime. Retirement is right in front of him. And Aaron Rodgers just doesn't give a bleep anymore. You know, that response yesterday after the game was pathetic. It was embarrassing. And it was just a terrible look for Aaron Rodgers. I'd much rather this year have a guy like Baker Mayfield than Aaron Rodgers. Younger, more upside now, and even though Baker Mayfield for his career totality can't hold Aaron Rodgers, you know what? In the year of 2024, he's the better quarterback, and he actually plays with heart, something Aaron Rodgers no longer does. So yeah, I do think Baker Mayfield is an underappreciated QB. And finally, Bills and Seahawks. This may have been one of the most impressive performances of the day. I like the Bills laying the 3. I thought they'd win the game by like 7 or 10, but I didn't think this would just be an ass kicking. And even though Amari Cooper did nothing statistically, you see how he opens up the offense because they have to pay attention to Amari Cooper. James Cook's a good running back. Keon Coleman's finding his groove. You know, Dalton Kincaid found the end zone. Everyone found the end zone if you were a tight end yesterday, National Tight Ends Day. And the Bills win 31-10. They walk into Seattle and they just smoke the Seahawks. Let's listen up. This is Josh Allen, a 12-yard touchdown pass to the man that I just mentioned. Dalton Kincaid had made it 14-3 Buffalo.
Allen takes the snap. Looking downfield. Steps up in the pocket. Throws. Has Kincaid lunging into the end zone for the touchdown. It's a 12-yard touchdown reception for the tight end Kincaid. And Buffalo is now up by 10 with an extra point pending.
And that is a Josh Allen vintage touchdown.
And a lot of numbers from this one. Josh Allen, 283 passing yards, two touchdowns, finally threw his first pick of the season. Also had 25 rushing yards. James Cook, awesome in this one. 17 for a 111, two touchdowns. It's his first game of over 82 yards this year, which is surprising because it feels like he's been playing a lot better than that. Khalil Shakir, 9 for 107. Keon Coleman, 5 for 70 and a score. Geno Smith, only 212 passing yards, no touchdowns and a pick. He has 8 touchdowns to 7 interceptions on the season. And how about this Buffalo defense? I know it's easy when you're blowing out a team, but they only allowed 17 carries in this game for 32 yards and one rushing touchdown, which was Zach Charbonnet, who hit, this was his stat line. 3 carries for 4 yards and a touchdown. Yikes. All righty, Stu, give me the question here and take us home on this one.
All right, what's your confidence level that the Bills can finally take out the Chiefs when it matters?
I picked the Buffalo Bills this year to win the AFC East. After the first few weeks of the season, I thought the Bills were the best team in the league. Then they had a bad performance against the Ravens, a bad performance against the Texans. I think the Bills are trending in the right direction. You know, Kansas City, they haven't even been playing at their best, and they're still better than all the rest. I think the conversation is Kansas City, teams that could beat them in the AFC, it's still the Ravens. And the, even though they lost yesterday, and then it's the Bills. They got a shot. I'm not going to tell you that I feel great, but they got a shot. The team that I'm most confident in actually this year to beat Kansas City would be the Detroit Lions. I'm feeling really good about the Lions. I like the mentality of the Lions. It reminds me a lot like the mentality Doug Peterson had in Philadelphia. You know, a little bit more energy and macho man bravado from Dan Campbell. But it reminds me a lot like that Eagles team that won the franchise its first ever Lombardi Trophy. But I think the Bills got a shot. I'm not going to say I'm, like, exploding with confidence and think, like, oh, yeah, it's definitely going to happen. They got a chance. So you're telling me there's a chance. All right, that's the Huddle Offense at Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. When we come on back, Eagles impressed yesterday. Where's my confidence in Nick Sirianni? We'll also get into this Monday night football game tonight between the Giants and the Steelers. Stinky, I know. Update time. Here's someone that isn't stinky. The Ackman, Rich Ackerman. We have breaking news we will get to in a second, but first, it's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts, and our question today comes from Drunkle Sam in the YouTube chat. This is a funny one. Does each update person write their own copy? I'll give you the answer in just a second. You know, it's a big question. You could submit a question by tweeting at INSportsNet or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag AskThePros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Guarantee low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Yeah, of course. What do you think? They just sit down and they just read whatever? You know, Ack writes his own script. When Pat Boyle, you know, is in there, he writes his own script. Manny Rodriguez writes his own script. Andrew Bogish writes his own script. But Marco Belletti, I don't actually think he writes a script. I think he just has things that he's going to talk about, and he knows what the audio is, but I don't think he physically writes out a script, if memory serves me right. But yes, 99.9% of them write their own scripts. Marco just doesn't follow a script because Marco never follows a script in life, I think. Anyway, we have breaking news. Hit the sounder.
We have breaking news on the Zach Gelb Show.
She who shall not be named, but we'll name her anyway. Congratulations. Gisele Bündchen is pregnant with a child from her relationship with the jiu-jitsu instructor. You know, the man that she was maybe doing more than just jiu-jitsu with, obviously, when Tom Brady was still married to her. And then they were dating. I remember reading they broke up because he couldn't handle the public spotlight. So I don't know if they're still together, but according to TMZ, the 44-year-old supermodel is pregnant, and the couple, or whatever we're calling this relationship, is waiting until birth to find out the baby's sex. Oh, boy. This is a juicy, juicy, juicy item. Gisele Bündchen, after having two kids with Tom Brady, after having a long marriage with Tom Brady, they broke up and got divorced in Tom Brady's final season in the NFL, which was, what, 2 years ago? Because he was out all last year, and then obviously this year is now with Fox. Yeah, Gisele, already pregnant with the jiu-jitsu instructor. So I don't know, just because, you know, hey, Brady had a child out of wedlock. Just because you're having a baby doesn't mean that they are a couple. But I thought they broke up. I guess, you know, maybe they're back together. Who knows? I don't know how many months pregnant Gisele is, but that's the breaking news. You think Kevin Burkhardt, by the way, Stu, whatever the national, I think they're at for Detroit Green Bay this weekend. I think I could be wrong on that.
Ooh, that's a good one.
But do you think that Kevin Burkhardt in the introduction goes, hey, by the way, Tom, before we break down this matchup between Jordan Love and Jared Goff, and we get your thoughts on a little Packers and Lions, any comment on your former wife, your ex-wife, Gisele Bündchen, you know, supposedly pregnant? Well, how do you break that down, Tom? This is why we're paying you $375 million.
That would be great. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Zero chance.
Negative 20% chance.
Like, this is going to sound like a slap to Kevin Burkhardt, which it doesn't mean to be because I love Kevin Burkhardt. He doesn't got the stones to ask that question. Quite frankly, I don't have the stones to ask that question. But that's very interesting. And you know Jim Gray is not going to ask him that question, that's for sure. As Jim Gray just sucks off the teat of the Tom Brady cow all the time. All righty. Let me get to the Eagles yesterday real quickly. I was very impressed by them. And I don't believe in Nick Sirianni. You know, I had some bozo on Twitter yesterday, which, you know, tell me another day that ends in Y. Go, why are you so critical of Nick Sirianni? They won a bunch of games in a row. Yeah, like, we got to praise him for the Browns. We got to praise him for the Giants. Yesterday was the best the Eagles have looked. I will give them that. But my point about Sirianni is I don't think you win a Super Bowl with him. And the Eagles have Super Bowl aspirations this year. So no, just beating the Bengals is a step in the right direction. It's a heck of a win. It's their best win of the season. And maybe that Devontae Smith catch in the end zone by Jalen Hurts on the throw, it changes that season around and turns it around. But I still don't believe that Sirianni wins a Super Bowl this year. But it was a heck of a performance yesterday. All right, we'll get to the game tonight. You know, the only reason you want to watch is just see how Russell Wilson performs. You know, does anyone think the Giants are going to win this game? Who knows after yesterday in the NFL? But I don't. But it seems like even though the Justin Fields experiment led to a bunch of wins, he wasn't playing great. It seems as long as the Steelers win with Russell Wilson, he's going to continue to be the guy in Pittsburgh. So, you know, we'll keep an eye, I guess, on that one tonight. But really, outside of the Russell Wilson stuff, there's no reason to tune in. You know, if you only had one TV, which I don't, and I'm going to the Yankee game anyway, the Yankee-Dodgers World Series, so I don't know how much I'm going to watch Giants and Steelers. But if you only had one TV and you had to watch something tonight and you could only pick between the Giants and the Steelers or Game 3 of the World Series, you pick Game 3 of the World Series. So, Stu, confidence that the Yankees win tonight?
I think they'll win tonight, but I'm not, like, totally confident.
You're being held hostage over there? You don't really sound all that confident, if I'm being honest.
I'm not very confident. Okay. I'm hopeful they'll win tonight.
You think this World Series is over? Like, if the Yankees come on back and win the World Series at 100%, what would you put that number at right now?
12%.
Okay, so pretty low. Number 12, is that you taking a shot at Tom Brady? You know, rubbing it in, going 12, and hey, Giselle's pregnant. You know, how about that? You're not the father. That was a low-class move by you, Steph. All righty, that's the Zach Gelb Show on this Monday. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Jake Retzloff, the quarterback at BYU, is going to join us. I'd like to thank Jeremiah Love, the running back at Notre Dame that has at least one touchdown in every game this season, for joining us earlier today. Samter, thank you. Stu, thank you. Ack, thank you. And a big thank you to each and every one of you for tuning in to the Zach Gelb Show extravaganza on a Monday. Talk tomorrow, everybody. We out. Bye-bye.
Peace!
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.